Chapter 27. Irrepressible. Music and the Temporal Lobes. In 1984, I met Vera B., an elderly woman who had just been admitted to a nursing home because of medical problems, including severe arthritis and breathlessness, that made independent life increasingly difficult for her. I found no neurological problems, but I was struck by the fact that Vera was so high-spirited, talkative, jokey, and a trifle flirtatious. I did not think this was of any neurological import at the time, but just an expression of character. When I saw her again 4 years later, I observed in my notes, she shows impulses to sing old Yiddish songs, and at times a near irrepressible chutzpah. It seems to me now that she is losing her inhibitions. By 1992, this picture of disinhibition had become florid. Sitting outside the clinic, awaiting me, Vera was singing A Bicycle Built for Two in a loud voice, interlarding the lyrics with words of her own invention. In my office, she continued to sing songs in English, Yiddish, Spanish, Italian, and a polyglot mixture that contained, I suspected, all of these, plus some of her native Latvian. When I phoned Connie Tomeno, our music therapist, she told me that Vera now tended to sing non-stop the entire day. Previously, she had not been terribly musical, Connie said, but she's musical now. It was not easy to have a conversation with Vera. She was impatient with questions and often broke off in mid-answer to sing. I did what mental testing I could, and it was obvious that Vera was basically alert and oriented to her surroundings. She knew that she was an old lady in a hospital. She knew Connie, a young maidla. I forget her name. She was able to write and draw a clock. I was not sure what to make of all this. A peculiar form of dementia, I wrote in my notes. Cerebral disinhibition has proceeded apace. This may be due to an Alzheimer-like process, though surely with Alzheimer's she would be more impaired and confused. But I cannot help wondering about other, rarer entities. In particular, I wondered whether she had damage to the frontal lobes of the brain. Damage to the lateral portions of the frontal lobes can lead to inertia and indifference, as with Harry S., but damage to the medial or orbitofrontal areas has a very different effect, depriving one of judgment and restraint and opening the way to a non-stop stream of impulses and associations. People with this type of frontal lobe syndrome may be jokey and impulsive, like Vera, but I had never heard of excessive musicality as one of its symptoms. When Vera died a few months later from a massive heart attack, I tried to get an autopsy, wondering what the brain would show. But autopsies had become rare and difficult to obtain, and I was not successful. I was soon distracted by other matters and did not think about the puzzling case of Vera with her strange and, in a way, creative disinhibition, the wild singing and wordplay that had characterized her final years. It was only in 1998 when I read a paper by Bruce Miller and his colleagues in San Francisco on the emergence of artistic talent in frontotemporal dementia that I suddenly thought of Vera again, and realized that it was probably just such a dementia that she had had, although the emergence with her had been musical rather than visual. But if there could be emergence of visual artistic talents, why not musical ones? Indeed, in 2000, Miller et al. Published a short paper on the emergence of unprecedented musical tastes in some of their patients in the dementia unit at the University of California, San Francisco, and a longer, comprehensive paper with vivid case histories on functional correlates of musical and visual ability in frontotemporal dementia. Miller et al. Described a number of patients who showed heightenings of musical talents, or, in some cases, the startling appearance of musical inclination and talents in previously unmusical people. Such patients had been described before in an anecdotal way, but no one before had seen and followed so many patients or explored their experiences in such depth and detail. I wanted to meet Dr. Miller and, if possible, some of his patients. When we met, Miller first talked in general terms about frontotemporal dementia, how its symptoms and the underlying brain changes that caused them had been described in 1892 by Arnold Pick, even before Alois Alzheimer had described the better-known syndrome that now carries his name. For a time, Pick's disease was considered relatively rare, but it is now becoming clear, Miller pointed out, that it is far from uncommon. Indeed, only about two-thirds of the patients Miller sees in his dementia clinic have Alzheimer's disease. The remaining third have several other conditions, of which frontotemporal dementia is perhaps the most common. Unlike Alzheimer's disease, which usually manifests itself with memory or cognitive losses, frontotemporal dementia often starts with behavioral changes, disinhibitions of one sort or another. This is perhaps a reason why relatives and physicians alike may be slow to recognize its onset, and confusingly, there is no constant clinical picture but a variety of symptoms, depending on which side of the brain is chiefly affected, and whether the damage is mainly in the frontal or the temporal lobes. The artistic and musical emergencies that Miller and others have observed occur only in patients with damage chiefly in the left temporal lobe.